Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI Podcast is brought to you by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo, and this is my KFI Podcast. This show originally aired on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles on Sunday, June 11th, 2006. This is show 256.
June 11th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you so much, Deborah, and a very good morning to you all. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. This is the show where we talk about tech. And I'm pretty proud to say, I think that we are very forthright. Name names. We're very honest about what's good and what's bad in the tech world. And, you know, I'm here to really give you good information. And not just about computers or the internet or MP3 players or cell phones, but camcorders, too, and digital cameras, of course, and even home theater. Anything with a chip in it. That is what this show is all about. Now, I can't do it alone. I need your calls, of course. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. And, you know, you can also participate in other ways. We've got a chat room. In fact, let me log into the chat room right now because I know they're in there waiting for me. You can go in, too. All you have to do is go to irc.dslextreme.com or go to my show notes page because that has everything about the chat room and all the other stuff that's going on, including my podcast, the message boards, and notes about the things we talk about on the show. That show notes page is available through the KFI page. If you go there right now, you'll see my picture on the front of the KFI page. Click that, and it'll take you to my little home on the KFI page, KFIAM640.com. And there's an official site link, and that's me. The official site will take you to the show notes page, which is leo.am. I was looking for a short URL, and you can't get much shorter than six letters, leo.am. It's not .com, it's .am. That's the Armenian ministry, registry. The Armenian, you know, every country has its own country code. There are .us domains as well, usually owned by city and local governments. But you can get a .us domain yourself. Usually, though, it'll have the region in it as well. You know, la.ca.us. And other countries have their domains. You know, Netherlands is NL. Germany is DE. England is UK. And some countries have realized, boy, you know, we have pretty good initials. The Island Republic of Tuvalu, which is in the South Pacific, has .tv. And some bright guy there, or maybe somebody from the outside that contacted them, said, hey, you know, .tv, that could be worth something. And so they have a registry, and you can register a .tv domain name. The problem is with it, it's kind of expensive. I tried to get leo.tv. They wanted $500 a year for that. Whereas a .com is about $8.95 if you shop around, $8.95 a year. So $500 is a lot. I didn't go for that one. I got leoville.tv, which was, I think, $100. It was cheaper. Maybe it was $60. It was a lot cheaper. But the three letters, for some, I guess they knew the three letters would be more valuable. And there's .am, as I mentioned. That's Armenia. And only recently they've started selling that. And you can, and you know it's recent because a lot of radio stations, you know, KFI should probably have KFI.am. I don't know if they do or not. A lot of radio stations, you would think, would have it. There's a .fm also. In fact, the biggest internet, or one of the biggest, certainly one of the best internet radio stations online is last.fm. last.fm. I don't know if there's an last.am. I should type that in and see. But Last FM is a really cool station. What are some other good... you see a lot of TK. I don't know why, but for some reason, I guess that was one of the first countries that started selling these domains. I don't even know where TK is. And I don't know why you'd want TK. The best known use of the US domain is Delicious. del.icio.us, which is a bookmarking site. Now, see, that's a good domain. del.icio.us. Delicious. With some dots in the middle. I just like that. There's some other ones like Delicious. There's Scriptaculous and some others that use that U.S. domain. I'm not sure. You know, I'm going to have to do some research into how you would get a .us without getting the locality in there. I wonder, a leo.us would be kind of cool. In any event, I'm leo.am. That's how we got started on that topic. You can go there and you can find the current show notes for this show by clicking Sunday Show. This is show 256 over there on the left, but you'll see other links there. Saturday Show, Sunday Show, there's past shows, so you can find previous shows. There's audio archives of all the shows going back to January 2004 when I started doing this. The chat. There's also a tips page where I put things, kind of things people ask a lot. You know, how to get rid of spyware. What's the best antivirus? That stuff's on the tips page. The FAQ is answers to frequently asked questions, but more like, who am I? And how do I listen to the show? Or how do I participate in chat? Things like that. There's a glossary. Profiles of listeners that you are invited to fill out. And then links to the outside pages. And, of course, to all of our great sponsors. So, a little tour. That's leo.am. I have at the top there, send me a voice message. That is a way that if you have a microphone on your computer and you have Flash 8, you can record a message. And I haven't been using those. I'm sorry. I apologize. Really got to start using those again. There's quite a few of them built up now in the inbox. And I will get to many of those. Maybe today. It takes a little extra effort on my part ahead of time. I have to remember, I've got to go listen to those. Because I don't just want to put them on the air without listening to them. You never know. But the best way to get a hold of me, best way to participate in the show is call that number, 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. And, you know, we can talk about anything having to do with technology. Certainly if you're, you know, reading an ad and wondering what the words in the ad mean, I can explain that to you. We had a call yesterday about the new Intel chips and whether it was worth waiting. I love talking about that kind of stuff. Opinion about some of the political things that are happening. We talked yesterday, and I'd love to get a debate going on this net neutrality issue. There are pros and cons on both sides. I have to say, the moves that the big cable companies, the telcos, are making to start to charge people more for using things like BitTorrent or voice over the internet, to me, is exactly the opposite of what the internet's all about. The internet was designed to treat every bit the same, and that's what net neutrality means, is non-discrimination on the internet, that no matter what you're doing with your internet connection, a bit is a bit. You pay for bits, right? You pay for the number of bits. Now, nobody's saying an internet service provider can't charge you for better service overall, higher speed or better service overall. I mean, that's the difference between dial-up and high speed. That's fine. We're saying that they can't, once you pay for a certain level of service, you should get that level of service no matter what you're doing. And there's two things going on. The big cable companies and telcos are doing two things. One is they're trying to quash the competition. They don't like it, for instance, that you don't have to use the phone service that they provide, that you can use a voice over the internet product over their lines. Somebody pointed out, well, you can't really get a DSL line without voice service. That's not true. You can get bare DSL. You don't have to order voice service. It costs more because they know that you could be using it for voice service. And by the way, net neutrality doesn't say you can't charge them more for service. It means you can't discriminate. You can't use your position as a provider of internet service to try to put the competition out of business, nor can you try to make an extra buck by charging companies like Google for access to your customers. You don't want your internet service provider to be a gatekeeper. Somebody who says, well, you have access to Leo, but you don't. Or if you want better access to Leo, you better pay me some extra money. That's very damaging the way the net works. But I know not everybody agrees. We can talk about it. Net neutrality is a hot topic. There was an amendment in Congress on the Telco Act, which passed in the House, but the amendment was removed. It was defeated to impose net neutrality. And in general, I am against government regulation of the internet of any kind. But the telcos and the cable companies are going to Congress saying, well, you've got to give us the right to do this tiered net internet, this multi-tiered internet where some people get better service than others. You've got to allow us to do this. And others are going to Congress saying, well, you've got to pass a law that prevents it, that actually says that you believe it's important to protect the neutrality of the internet, the one size fits all internet. So, hey, if government would stay out of it entirely, that'd be another thing. But what we really don't want is them to pass a law saying, oh, yeah, no problem. Go ahead, mess things up, charge whatever you want. 1-800-520-1KFI. Let's talk about that. Anything on your mind, I'm here to do it for you. 1-800-520-1534. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
The truth may hurt, but she'll tell you anyway. Dr. Laura, tomorrow, noon to 3.
KFI AM 640.
1122, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. In the chat room, they're debating which portable game console to get. Of course, tomorrow, Nintendo's DS Lite hits the stores. And the PSP from Sony is cheap. Its chief competition has been out for about a year. I bought it more than a year now. Well, it was a year and a half, isn't it? I bought a PSP right away, the day it came out. Because I really liked, it's a great screen. It's a beautiful looking, really handsome device. I was in North Carolina. I was in Raleigh-Durham when I bought it. And I walked into a Best Buy. I said, yes, I'll take it. And by the time I was at the door with all the goodies, accoutrements, games, that was, I think, $400 or $500. The Nintendo DS Lite, which is a revised edition of its DS. Now, I had a DS briefly for review, and I was underwhelmed. The screen wasn't so bright. I didn't get the idea of the touch screen. But now here we are more than a year later, and they're updating it. It's about 20% smaller, much brighter screen. And the games, of course, have evolved, and there's some great games for it. I have to say, I dismissed the DS for a long time, and I was schooled by people who said, the DS is great! And that's the debate in the chat room. Although, interestingly, the people who are promoting the PSP aren't really using it for gaming. And see, that's where my disappointment lies with the PSP. Yeah, it's great for playing movies. Although, I don't know how much longer that movie format's going to live. Whether Sony will keep the UMD movies alive. But, of course, you can always, and I think this is what most people do, they just burn the DVDs onto the memory stick. They get a big 1 gigabyte memory stick. Oh, there's another $120 down the tubes. And you put movies of that, and people use it to browse the internet and all sorts of stuff like that. DS Lite is not, it's a game thing, but the games have gotten very good. I'm really enjoying Sonic Rush. Brain Age is great. The new Brain Age Academy trains your brain. They have a lot of adult stuff as well as kid stuff. I think that's, they're trying to get over their reputation as a kid's machine. So if you want to join the chat room and join the debate, that's... Go in there and vote for your favorite. My recommendation at this point, I'd say buy a DS Lite. If you're looking for a portable game device, I think there's just no question about it. The DS Lite is great. Jim Pasadena, welcome to KFI, our first caller of the day. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Leo. Next month, when my Norton System Works runs out, I'm considering going to Nod 32 or the Phantom. iPhantom.
Mm-hmm. You don't need both. One or the other would do fine.
Really? You don't need both?
No. Well, both are antiviruses.
Okay. So then could I eliminate all the 4 spyware removal programs I have? Or I need to keep those too?
That's a good question. I haven't had any spyware problems since I've been using the iPhantom. I know that the antivirus on the iPhantom is very good because they use the McAfee Corporate, which is a very good antivirus. So everything that you get through the iPhantom is scanned by the McAfee. And then, of course, because it's a firewall, it blocks attacks like, Zotab, MS Blast, Sasser. Those incoming attacks. So I think that in terms of an antivirus, I think that that's more than adequate. As far as spyware goes, spyware has gotten so nasty and subtle. And a lot of it is your behavior. They cannot, and by the way, no anti-spyware program can either, protect you from yourself. And so really a lot of what it takes to not get spyware is not merely just having the software or having an iPhantom protecting you, but it's things like using Firefox, not saying yes to sites when they ask to install stuff, you know, just being judicious about what you do on the net.
Okay, so I should keep it for the spyware and run the scans occasionally to make sure I didn't get something that I didn't realize.
Yeah, my opinion is since the anti-spyware is free and doesn't run in the background, but merely makes modifications to your system to make it more secure, you should go ahead and use that free anti-spyware, the Adaware, the SpyBot, and the Microsoft Defender. I'd go ahead and keep using that.
Well, Spyware Doctor is changed. I went to do see if they had a newer version, and they didn't say it wasn't free, and I downloaded it. And I ran the scan, and it said,
you have
stuff, but we can't remove it until you take it.
I've never recommended Spyware Doctor, ever.
Oh. Okay.
That's never been on my list. If you want a commercial one, there's two good commercial ones. It's Pest Patrol or the WebRoot's Spy... Is it SpyWasher? Spy Sweeper from WebRoot. Either one of those is fine. I don't recommend Spy Doctor.
Okay.
I don't think you need a commercial one. If you have the iPhantom, I think you've bought all the software you need. It's not a bad idea to have multiple anti-spyware because it's not running in the background. So it's a second opinion.
Yeah, you know, I have a router and I've got DSL, so I run a router and a firewall, physical software firewall and an antivirus.
You know, I'm of the opinion that if you are good about all of that and your behavior is cautious, you don't open attachments. I never open an email attachment. You're really careful about phishing scams. By the way, the iPhantom protects you against phishing scams, as does Nod32. I don't think you actually need to be running a bunch of software in the background because it's really behavioral. Now, I don't say that often because there's a lot of people listening who really ought to be running antiviruses.
Yeah, they're not cautious.
They're not cautious or they don't know. So the antivirus is protecting them. But you're obviously a sophisticated user. If you really know what you're doing, no security expert I know runs an antivirus program. I don't run an antivirus program on my main machine, the one that I use all the time, because I'm really careful about what I do with it. I do run them on everything else because my kids use them and so forth.
Well, I have DSL, so I'm not really concerned about the iPhantom slowing me down. My mom's got dial-up, and
For your mom, of course, she can't use it on dial-up.
You can't?
No.
Okay.
It's only a high speed.
Well, unfortunately, she wants DSL Extreme, but they don't have it there yet. There's not enough people, I guess, in that area, so she's stuck on dial-up on DSL until they get their enough people there.
It took me a long time to convince my mom to go high speed, although now that she's gone high speed, she realizes it's well worth the additional money.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
she gets a lot more out of it.
It's not available.
Right, right.
The other thing that I'm having a problem with is, if I can, maintenance on XP.
Hold on a second. We'll talk about that. That's actually a great question, but I got to go to news. Leo Laporte, we'll talk about what to do to maintain XP to keep it running right. That's actually something we should talk about more often, since we're going to be waiting at least 6 more months before we get a new version of Windows. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio, 1129. Deborah Marks in the KFI News Center.
Making common sense more common. John and Ken, tomorrow 3 to 7.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. We were talking to Jim about Windows, and of course his first concern, as it should be, is security. Talked about antiviruses and any spyware. But once you've got it locked down, then the next question is, how do you keep it running right? I take it that's what you're asking, Jim.
Yeah. I'm using Norton System Works, and I've been happy with that. I mean, I use all the utilities to clean out, you know, stuff. And
It's a useful toolkit. It may not be the best one out there. My main concern with System Works is the stuff that runs in the background, things like
if I'm not going to use the antivirus, then I don't want to renew it. If there's something better I can use, I just soon get that.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to renew anything but the antivirus. So SystemWorks, the stuff that I recommend using with SystemWorks will continue to work. It's only the antivirus that you're renewing.
Right.
So the things like the unerase, the things like the Wind Doctor, although I'm a little less excited about Wind Doctor, but occasionally it can help fix problems. Most people don't really need a whole lot of additional tools, to be honest with you. In fact, these tools can cause more trouble than they're worth. Registry cleaners tend to mess up registries. A Wind Doctor tends to mess things up more than it fixes.
Right.
What you really need is a defragmenter, which, of course, Windows comes with, but the Norton Disk Defrag is a little bit better. You need probably, from time to time, you'll want to run a check disk type program. Now, I personally think SpinWrite's the best, but Norton does have an okay disk doctor. But those are really, you don't need a whole lot more than that anyway.
Well, what about all the internet files and all the stuff you need to clean out regularly? I mean,
like what?
Well, whatever
like temp,
builds up.
Temp files? Well, in theory, those shouldn't build up. Of course, that's theory and practice sometimes diverge when it comes to computers.
Norton has a web cleaner thing that goes through.
Yeah, you know, a lot of this stuff is...
I know. I don't know if it's real or not.
It's marketing.
Seems like they fix the same problem over and over again just to show
yeah,
you
notice that. Have you noticed that? It's always the same issue.
Yeah, and I'm going, I thought you fixed that last time.
Well, not really, because there's nothing wrong with it. So, for instance, we're talking about cleaning up web files. If you use Firefox or Internet Explorer, they both have cleanup tools. You know, clear the cache, clear the history. That's all Norton's doing. You have also a temp file folder, which Windows creates. Now, that one's a little trickier. Windows does have a disk cleanup utility, which will clear it out. That does exactly the same thing as Norton. I would say that there isn't much in Norton that you don't get with Windows. What you might get is somewhat better of a check disk program with the Norton Disk Doctor, somewhat better of a defrag program with Speed Disk.
I think what it gets down to is having something that can do it for you without having to be a brain surgeon to go, oh, I need to go over here and do that. I need to go this and that and so forth.
You don't usually need to do it, to be honest with you. For instance, there's a debate over how often you should defrag. I'm not a big fan of defragging more. You know, I just read, of course, this was a press release from Disk Keeper, which is a high-end defrag program. And they said, we're going to see 30% improvement in performance by defragging every day, which is just not anything I've ever seen. It's not, none of our tests or benchmarks have ever shown that kind of result. I don't know what they're talking about. And in fact, you can do more damage to yourself by defragging all the time, wearing out your hard drive. So I think, you know, defragging every 6 months is fine unless you're doing something unusual. I think check disk when you need it, empty temp files when your hard drive's running low. You know, I don't think these things are... It's not like a car where you need to tune it up regularly.
Okay. So SpinWrite would be a good...
SpinWrite is an excellent program. I mean, it's overkill for some people. But if you have many hard drives or you're really concerned about hard drive integrity, there is no better program for checking it and for maintaining it. And ultimately, if you have to do recovery, you can often recover data.
Well, a couple of months ago, I lost my profile.
Yeah.
I think what happened is it got on a bad sector of the hard drive.
Yeah, there you go. SpinWrite would have fixed that.
SpinWrite
is Norton Disk Doctor was written because Symantec went to Steve Gibson and said, "We like SpinWrite. Can we buy it?" And he said, "No." So they said, "Well, okay." And they wrote their own, but they don't have the years of experience doing this that Steve does. I mean, they tried to duplicate it, but it is not the same program. If you want the ultimate Disk Doctor, that's SpinWrite.
Good.
So I mean, it's $80 by itself.
Right. I mean, but see, if I was going to buy Norton, it would cost me that much, so I might as well buy this.
I think you don't need... There's no reason to upgrade your Norton. If you're not going to buy the antivirus, then there's no reason to... You've got the tools already. If you want a good disk maintenance tool, yes, spend that money on SpinWrite. You know, ESET's Nod 32 is a lot cheaper antivirus. See, what happens with these big suites is... PC Magazine is to blame. We're to blame because what happens is they do these tables with checkboxes, and you compare the three big suites. And if you people buy the one with all the check marks, but as a result, what you get is this bloated nightmare of a program that slows your machine down by a factor of two or three.
I had that problem on a Windows 98 machine. It was getting so slow.
Yeah.
That I just couldn't run anything, and finally I went
this.
To a P4.
Right. Well, the answer really shouldn't have to be upgrade your hardware. It should be not buy bloatware. So it's unfortunate. It always happens with the product leader. So it's McAfee and it's Norton. And, right. and they're just in a battle with each other to have the most check marks. Well, guess what? They're the most bloated programs. I no longer recommend them. I used to recommend Norton Antivirus. It was an excellent antivirus. But they got behind. They got more concerned about having all the check marks. And they slowed people's computers down. And I just can't recommend it anymore.
So I'll probably put iPhantom on mine and run get SpinRite. Now my mom's computer, I'll put ESET.
If you're responsible for a lot of computers, SpinRite's worth buying because, you know, one copy and you don't keep it on the computer. You actually keep it. It runs from DOS. So you keep it on a CD, a boot CD, or a boot floppy. And so when you need to fix something or you want to check every once in a while, you go over there and you say, okay, mom, I'm just going to check your system. And that's the way to do it. You don't want something running in the background.
Sounds good.
All right.
Really appreciate all your help.
I'm glad you asked, Jim, because this is something that comes up a lot. And I'm a little contrarian. I know a lot of, quote, computer experts say, oh, you got to defrag the disk all the time and run a reg cleaner and all that stuff. I have yet to see any good come out of a reg cleaner. And I've seen a lot of bad come out of a reg cleaner. Registry is these massive files. There's a couple of them that maintain system settings. A lot of times you uninstall a program, the settings are still in the registry. So what these reg cleaners do is they look through the registry for so-called orphaned entries that no longer correspond to a program you have, and they delete them. I guess in theory, that's a good thing, but your hard drive and your registry aren't like a closet. They don't need to be, you know, swept and dusted regularly. The registry is just fine, and messing with it often causes more problems than it fixes. Leaving those entries in is harmless. They're unused. They just sit there. They occupy a tiny fragment of disk space. That's it. That's the only negative. Taking them out, especially if you need them, can be disastrous. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so I don't believe in prophylactic maintenance, to be honest with you. I believe in responding to a problem with a computer. Generally, computers work best if you change them least. Think about your own experience. When does your computer problem happen? When you add some new hardware, you change or install some new software, you change some settings. A computer out of the box, just as it is from the factory, and you don't modify anything, will run just fine for a decade. No problem. It's all the things we do to it that cause the problems. Virginia and Southgate, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hey, Virginia.
Oh, hi.
Welcome.
Hey.
Thanks for your patience.
Hey. I'm having an awful lot of problems with people in my neighborhood, you know, playing a lot of bass. I mean, and the cars, they will park.
I hate that. What is that all about? It's just showing off, isn't it?
They say that it's not loud. I say, I'm going to call the police. They say, well, it's not loud. And I says, but it's shaking my house.
It might not be loud for you. It's loud. It's not loud to them. They're deaf. If your windows are rattling, it's loud.
I know. And it goes on. It just goes on daily, 24/7
sometimes.
Oh,
I'm so sorry.
And, yeah,
I mean, there are ordinances. There are ordinances about how loud it can be, but how often you're going to call the police? I mean, what can you do?
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm the bad guy here, but I do call the police.
Good.
When it goes on,
and they shut it down.
And they
right?
do respond.
Yeah.
Well, they respond, but generally by the time they come out, and they can't hear it either, to tell you the truth, unless they stop their car and get out. You know, kind of feel that vibration.
Right.
When they're passing by in their car, it's not a big loud party noise. I mean, they will shut down parties. I mean, definitely do that. But this is just that bass that's going up and down the block that the people initiating it just don't understand. And I'm wondering, instead of having to wear earphones all the time or put up a sound wall.
And that doesn't really work, does it, if you have bass?
Because it
vibrates your body. You can't help it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't study. You can't watch TV. You know, you can't listen to Leo Laporte.
So what are you looking for? You want a technological solution?
I'm wondering if there's I keep hearing something about a linear amplifier. And when I was at a a protest, let's say, about 6 months ago, I noticed that the people that were protesting us had this thing that just came back at our loudspeaker and made our loudspeaker squeal. Or they had
wow.
a squeal. That,
that's mean.
Yeah, that, yeah
that's really mean. Wow.
Protest.
Wow.
Well, I want one.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if there isn't something like that, because
well, what you don't want is, you don't want an amplifier, you want a noise canceller. Now, are you okay. saying you want to fire something at them that will drive them crazy?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, well, maybe you do want an amplifier.
That, okay. What is that?
Well, I'm not sure it's legal, to be honest with you.
I don't think it is, but...
And the truth is, I don't think it would work. If they're listening to the radio, there's stuff you can do to disrupt the radio, but they're not. They're listening to CDs in their car, and it's all electrically wired. It's not wireless. None of it's wireless. And they don't have a microphone. I mean, the reason they could do hit you with the megaphone is because you had a microphone on that sucker. But they don't have a microphone. You might be able to, with a transmitter, a fairly powerful illegal transmitter, send out enough electrical noise to jam, to cause buzzing or jamming in their sound systems. That is possible. It would be illegal because not only would it interfere with them, it would interfere with everything within that radius, right? Including TVs and radios. And, lights might dim. I mean, I don't know. You'd have all sorts of effects. So the FCC would immediately come to you, not the guys out front with the boom boxes, but they'd come to you and shut you down.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I mean, there such things do exist. You could amplify an RF signal sufficiently to mess them up, but it would have to be, it would have to be very broad spectrum, and it would have to be such a powerful amplifier that you wouldn't hear it, by the way. It would be silent. It would be a radio jamming, essentially a radio jamming device. These things, the problem is because they're not using radios, it'd have to be powerful enough to actually infiltrate the cabling in their cars. And I don't think that's going to be... I wish I could say there was some practical way to do this.
Yeah, but, well, you're giving me an idea anyway.
Oh, no.
I know. Well, I won't tell
anybody. Don't name my... Don't say...
Right.
I'm completely sympathetic with you. I understand. I just don't know if there's much you can do about it, to be honest with you. And, I mean, I'll put a link in the show notes to a great article on soundproofing. I don't think there's anything that active you can do. I think there's only passive things that would be legal to do. To actively... jam them would be a lot of work and a very powerful. You'd have to send out very, very powerful electrical signals. I mean, that happens if you've ever lived next to a radio station and picked up the radio on your toaster. You know that with a powerful enough transmitter, you can infiltrate noise into almost any line. It's not expensive or hard to filter these or to shield these lines. Although I I'm sure these are very good sound systems, so they're probably somewhat shielded, but I'm if you had a 50,000 watt directional, you'd want it to be very directional. You'd want it to be something that you could aim at them out the window because you don't want to bring the whole neighborhood down. But yeah, I think it's conceivable. Whether you could buy such a thing, I don't know. And I know it would be illegal, but if you got a multi-thousand watt directional transmitter that you would aim at their car. You know who we got to call? Steve Wozniak could invent this for us. In fact, he probably has one. And I'm sure if you looked on the net, you'd find something like that. 11:52, 8. I don't know if I should be encouraging this. 8 away from noon, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Straight Shooters, John and Ken, tomorrow 3 to 7, KFI, AM 640.
We're having a great conversation in the chat room. I have to say about Virginia's problem and different solutions to it, none of which would be legal. Everything from a hiring that kid who shot the principal to cutting cords, climbing under the car, let the air out of the tires. I don't know. I think you might just have to live with it, Virginia. Leah LaPorte, that is one of the weirdest questions we've ever received on the show, and I'm glad to get it. I love it. If you've got a tech question of any kind, you give me a ring, 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leah LaPorte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. More of your calls coming up, but right now it's 11:59. That means it's time for Jessica Rosenthal in the KFI News Center.
June 11, 2006. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:06, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, J-Row. 12:06. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo LaPorte, the tech guy, here till 2 at 1-800-520-1KFI. Let's see here. Calls awaiting, calls aplenty. Ellie in Irvine, you're next. Welcome to KFI. Hello, Ellie.
Hi, Leo. I'm looking for a GPS, but I want it to be versatile where you could use it in a car as well as if you're a pedestrian walking around and stuff like that. And I really don't want to spend a lot of money on it, but I want it to have voice as well.
Yeah, you want to, the voice is what they call turn-by-turn directions.
Right.
And I love them. And you want it for walking, too. That's interesting.
Right. My partner has a motorized wheelchair and wants to use it for that, you know.
So battery is going to be important, obviously.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of these, I mean, they all have battery, but most of them in the car, you plug them into the cigarette adapter because, you know, the battery is only for a few hours. So after a while, they wear out. But she won't be walking around for more than a few hours at a time, I'm sure.
Well, it's he, so.
He.
It doesn't matter.
But I mean, he doesn't need really, really long battery life, I presume.
No.
Yeah.
And price
is key, huh?
Yeah, I don't want to spend like $800 or $900, you know. I figured $500-$600 at the most.
Well, there are only a couple of choices in that price range. One is the Garmin IQ, and that's pretty tiny. Now, if he had a Palm or a Pocket PC, then we really could do it cheaply. Does he have a little handheld computer or no?
No, we used to have it with the cell phone, but
yeah,
we canceled that.
Right. I think, because there are a number of these that go on Palms. If not, and then that saves you money because you are providing the computer. I'm thinking the TomTom is probably the right one for you. It's probably the best low cost.
Really? I was told that wasn't a very good one.
Well,
they said the Magellan 800, I don't know if that would work.
It wouldn't be my first choice if you didn't say low cost, you know, given the parameters you gave me.
Right.
Low cost means they're not going to be as good, to be frank with you.
Well, what about the Magellan 800?
I haven't used the Magellan 800. Let me look at the form factor anyway and tell you about that. I haven't used it. I've been very happy with Magellans in general. Those are the ones that Hertz uses in its cars and never lost.
Because it says 2 hours continuous use. Now, who's going to use it continuously unless you're going to download MP3s?
No, you do use it continuously because it's, as long as you're getting directions, it's on.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this would be fine. It is. I'm surprised. It's less than I thought it was. It's only about $700, $600 or $700. It's
right, and I found a place that has it on sale for $599.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is just within your price range. I think the Magellans are very good. I have nothing to say bad about it. I haven't used this particular one, but I've used its bigger brothers and have been very happy with it. I think they have very good turn-by-turn directions. You know, on something like this, a good idea is to go to Amazon.com. Not that you're going to buy it there necessarily, but look at the reviews. Because what they have is they have consumer reviews. People are actually using the darn thing. And that, I find, you know, you take it in aggregate. You don't, you know, because there'll always be one person who says it's the worst thing I ever bought and one person who says it's the best thing I ever bought. But if you take it in aggregate, you'll get a very good idea of the quality of a product. Let me just look and see what people say about the 800. Generally, you'll find out what the negatives are of it.
Right.
And the other thing that
which
they'll
is good to know.
Yeah. And the other thing they'll do, everything has negatives, you know. And the other thing they'll do is say, well, here's what other people bought after looking at this, which is always interesting because that might give you some other ideas. I would say, you know, I've been very happy with Magellan products. I'm looking here and there's one really negative review and then there's a bunch of very positive reviews. It looks like the reviews are mixed. So read them and see if the negatives are things that you care about.
So what's the biggest negative?
Well, I'll just tell you. I'll read the negative review here. It was one star. It says, they should name this product Design Blender for the Ages.
Whatever that
is. You get an MP3 player, but you can't play music and get directions at the same time. I don't know if you care about that.
Well, that's logical.
Yeah, I don't think you care about that. So
no.
That's an example of you read the review and you go, oh, well, the reason this person doesn't like it is because he wants to listen to music while the thing's telling him which way to go.
Right.
The main thing I think they all agree, and I would agree, is that Magellan does very good GPS in the navigation. The turn-by-turn directions are very good in the Magellan. So,
I was told it was much better than the TomTom.
Yeah, I mean, it's more expensive. But if you're willing to spend, you know, that's right at the top of your range. Yeah, sure, why not? Another one to look at that's in that price range but a little smaller is the Street Pilot from Garmin, which I think is also very good.
Yeah, they had one that was completely handheld and was $800.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if that one.
Yes, smaller sometimes costs more. There is one that's a little bit bigger. If he's in a chair, it's not such a critical issue because he can put it on the arm of the chair or something like that.
Yeah, and we're also going to use it in the car when we go, you know, in somebody else's car. So.
Right. I think those are some good choices, but again, I haven't used that particular one, so I'm not giving you a personal thumbs up or thumbs down. I have used Magellan's, and I find them very good. The directions are excellent, and it's very clear, easy to use. And I would suggest for specific models, you read the reviews on Amazon or ePinions or one of the sites where real users cast their votes, and I think that's always a great way to find out if something is good or bad. I do that before I buy anything nowadays. I think it may be one of the best things that's happened on the internet. And I encourage you, if you buy a product, and I should do this more often, but if you buy, I'd have to use a pseudonym, but if you buy a product, say what you like and don't like about it. Do those reviews, you know, at Amazon or ePinions or somewhere, and help other people. Especially if you really like a product. I'll give you an example. I was looking for a clock radio, and I was reading the reviews, and I wanted one of the, you know, kind of more hi-fi ones, like a Bose or there's a number of kind of hi-fi clock radios. And I kept reading the reviews on them, and nobody was crazy about any of them. And then all of a sudden, I come across one. And people are giving it glowing review after glowing review. It's the Boston Acoustics Receptor. And they say, this thing has the best user interface we've ever seen. It's the sound is excellent. And based on those reviews, I bought it. And I have to agree that I would have never looked at that. I would never have thought of it. I mean, no, I know Boston Acoustics makes great sounding stuff. But I would have never known how good the user interface is. And it turns out, if you think about it, clock radios are often have terrible, you know, they're hard to set the alarm, hard to figure out what the alarm is and so forth, hard to set the stations. You put up with it because that's, you know, that's the way it is. It wasn't until I used this Boston Acoustics Receptor that I realized, wow, there is a better way to go. So that's an example of finding something on Amazon that I think I might not have seen had I not read the reviews. Harry Lancaster, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Harry.
Hello, Leo. I'd like to set up a wireless small office, and I'm looking at these Bluetooth adapters that plug into USB ports.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can I plug one into my computer and plug another one into my laptop and talk back and forth?
You can. It's called Bluetooth networking. Bluetooth does allow that.
Okay.
It is a peer-to-peer connection.
Right.
It's slow.
Oh, I got no trouble with slowness.
I mean, it's really slow. But if you can live with it, it's about, I used to know, I think it's 8 kilobits. It's not as fast as a network would be by any means.
Oh, yeah, B is 11, so.
11 megabits.
Oh,
this
okay,
is
that's
8
right.
Kilobits.
Right.
So
ooh.
It's right. It's very slow.
Okay.
It is cheaper than Wi-Fi. I mean, Wi-Fi would be the way to do this. If you already had a Wi-Fi card in the laptop.
Well, I've got it's distance factor. I can take my
Bluetooth
Wi-Fi
is shorter
card.
Than Wi-Fi. Bluetooth is only 30 feet.
I know, but I'm doing everything within my 30-foot office.
Oh, it's right next to it. Yeah. Well, Wi-Fi would do the same thing, and it would be a lot faster.
All right.
It would be for networking. It would be my recommendation. But yes, you can do it with Bluetooth.
Well, the trouble with Wi-Fi is I'm working through my wireless G router.
You don't have to.
You can
do exactly what you're proposing with the Bluetooth, which is called peer-to-peer or ad hoc networking, where the two machines are just talking to each other.
I'll have to look that up.
When you configure a wireless adapter in the settings,
I'm on everything.
Yeah, in the settings, you'll have a choice between infrastructure, which is using a base station, or ad hoc networking.
Okay.
Ad hoc networking means just networking two together.
Okay.
But then I don't see, if you already have an access point, you already have Wi-Fi, is there a reason why you don't want to use the access point?
Well, just knowing about it, I've got a wireless router that I'm using for the entire house.
Right.
So use the same one.
Yeah.
It's Ethernetted into the back of the main PC, and that's how I share my wireless internet connection.
Well, you're already got everything you need.
Okay.
So forget buying anything more. You're all set.
All right.
You have to do is share the. What is it? You want to just share data back and forth?
Right, I'm going to walk around with one machine in my hand, and I don't want to have wires dragging all over the place.
And that one machine that you're walking around with,
yeah, it's a Sony Vaio laptop.
You're going to do what with the base machine? You're going to just
it's storage, mainly, and internet connection.
Yeah, you totally can do that. You share a disk, and then you'll be logging into that computer from the Sony. As if you were a user, and you'll be able to see that shared disk. It'll show up. You can even map it to a drive letter, so you'll always see it every time you boot up. And you already have the internet connection being shared. So,
excellent.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. I wouldn't even buy any additional hardware. I think you've got everything you need. So you can do it with Bluetooth, but it's very slow. It's limited to 30 feet. And since you already have wireless, you already have Wi-Fi, that's a better way to go. It's much faster. No, you know, you don't have that limitation and distance either. 1218, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI News, powered by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI, AM 640.
1224 on KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, on KFI till 2 o'clock. And Dr. Dina Dell. I mentioned last hour Microsoft's Defender product, which has been free because it's been in beta test. My concern is it may not, now that OneCare is official and no longer free. This is the OneCare solution that Microsoft offers. And it's $50 for up to three computers per year. It's antivirus, anti-spyware, automatic protection, you know, using Microsoft's automatic update feature, that kind of thing. I think a lot of people are doing it. I was a little concerned. I thought, maybe Defender is no longer free. But I went to the site, and it is still free. If you're using Windows XP or Windows 2000, and you know you have to run the automatic Windows Genuine Advantage piracy detector, which some people don't like because it seems to send home information about your computer every day. But if you're willing to do that, it is still free. Now, they say it's in beta still, beta 2. So I'm thinking maybe it won't be free forever. But now would be a good time to get it. So it's my favorite anti-spyware. Microsoft bought a commercial program from a company called Giant that was very good and has worked on it. And I think improved it considerably. Mostly what I like about it is the real-time protection features, the stuff that keeps your system safe. Stuff that, by the way, will be in Vista, will be in the next version of Windows. Microsoft.com/spyware. Victor in Victorville. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy on KFI. Hello, Victor.
Leo, I need your help.
Good to talk to you. Yes.
I've got my computer's really, really slow when it boot up. I went to MS Config and every button in there is highlighted. What can I get rid of?
I get that question a lot. And the truth is, if it shows up in MS Config, almost always you can turn all of it off. It won't keep your system from booting, but it just may lose some functionality which you later want to turn back on. But frankly, it's safe to turn everything off.
There's a button that says delete all. I can.
Don't delete them. Just disable them.
Okay.
And that way, what it is, if you look, MS Config is the Microsoft System Configuration Utility. It's a startup manager, basically. It allows you to manage the programs as startup when your computer starts up. Now, the services you'll need, there's a services tab, and I wouldn't just turn everything off in services. Some of those you do need. Some of them you don't, and disabling services is one way to really speed up Windows.
And what services could I disable?
Well, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. This is a much more complicated question than I can answer on the air because it's a long list, but I'm going to put a link, and it depends a lot on what you do, too. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a mirror of a great site. Black Viper created this. He was a gamer, and he just kind of became obsessive about getting the most performance possible out of XP and literally did the work of testing one by one each service, seeing what it did, seeing whether he needed it. And he made a list of services that you can probably turn off. And by the way, by turning them off, really do increase the speed of XP considerably. So unfortunately, that site is down, but it has been mirrored by a number of other sites. I don't know how I don't know if they're keeping it up to date, but they at least have the original notes. So I'll put a link in that in there to the Black Viper site. And then as far as the other tab, which is the startup tab, those things probably almost all can be turned off. There are things like your antiviruses scanner that you might want to turn back on. But there's a lot of stuff you don't need. Things like, you know, AOL Instant Messenger, Adobe. When you install Adobe Reader, they put in a quick load program. Who needs that? It loads just fine. I don't need an extra program sitting there waiting for me to click a PDF file. QuickTime does that. A lot of programs, RealPlayer, all these programs turn on this stuff in the background. And you're right to want to turn it off, Victor. I mean, those things really slow you down. So my general suggestions, if you look at them, you'll know kind of what they are. You can turn them all off. I would leave the antivirus and stuff like that on, but you can turn them almost all of them off. It certainly won't. Here's the real answer. It won't keep your computer from booting. It just may turn off some features that you like. So one way to do this is turn them all off, see what's missing, selectively turn them back on. I will also put in the show notes a link to a very useful program that's basically MS Config but smarter and gives you more information. It's a free file that gives you more information about what you're turning off, and I think that's actually a better way to do it. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I always forget it. It's something generic, but I have it in previous show notes. I'll find it and I'll put it in there for today, and I'll tell you how to get those show notes and answer more calls in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1229. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
Bill Handel, tomorrow, 5 to 9.
KFI, AM 640.
It's a Bitter Geek Symphony. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. I am the Bitter Geek. No, I'm not. 1-800-520. Nothing to be bitter about. I'm happy today. A beautiful Sunday afternoon and glad you're here. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. The program I was trying to remember for Victor, the alternative to MS Config is called Starter. And that's why I can never remember it. Starter. It's generic. It's from CodeStuff. CodeStuff.cjb.net. And let's see. The latest update was in January, so it's pretty up to date, and I think a very valuable program, useful program to have. Highly recommend Starter. John in San Diego, welcome KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, John.
Hey, good, beautiful California afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon to you.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Yes,
I'd like
sir.
To start creating some videos for the web, and I was recommended Premiere Elements.
Yep.
And I was wondering to you, my question to you is that going to be good enough for just basic video tutorials for the web, or do I need to get something more robust like Premiere Pro, which
no.
I can't afford right
now? Oh, no, you didn't. Premiere Elements is more than enough. But it is really not aimed so much as at web video, although it can do it, as burning DVDs of, you know, making your own DVDs, that kind of thing, and editing family pictures. Are you doing screenshots? How are you? What are you doing?
No screenshots. In fact, that figured out with Camtasia. No, it's
that's exactly what I was going to suggest, by the way, is get Camtasia for the screenshots. Okay.
Looks really good. I picked them up, and it makes me look a lot better than I really am.
Yeah. that's a pretty, it's a pricey program, but if you want to make videos of the screen, there's no better program. It's really great.
Exactly. No, I just plan on doing some, I've got this really great idea for video tutorials, and
you're going to podcast them?
No, what I'll do is instead of podcasting them, since they're going to be on video, I take it there's really no need to have a duplicate podcast when the audio comes across in a flash format or, you know.
Well, no, but there are many. In fact, this is a common category in podcasting. Unfortunately, podcasting does imply audio, but it can be video as well. And there are a number of screen, they call them screen capture podcasts where people do exactly what you're talking about.
Is that like Serious Magic?
Yeah, well, I'm Mr. Excel, my buddy who has a great website on Excel, does a daily Excel tutorial. It's just screen capture, you know, a video of the screen as he shows you how to do something in Excel.
Uh-huh. And no, actually, these aren't going to be video tutorials as in on the screen. It's going to be interviewing a live person.
Oh, neat. You're going to do it in person then?
Yeah, in person.
Oh, yeah, you don't need a podcast then. Do you you want to charge for it, I take it?
Well, no, actually, by the way, I have another couple of sites that I run that, thanks to you, make me good money because I signed up with your advice on the Google advertising.
Oh, good. Oh, great.
And no, how I make money is obviously through providing great content, and then through an average of about a 1% click-through rate, I can make, you know, enough money to pay the bills on the servers and provide me some extra money. But my question is, once I have this up, a great way, I think, to promote it might be YouTube or Google Video. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I mean, YouTube has become, for many people, a substitute for television. I know my kids get home, they don't turn on the TV, they log into YouTube and see what new videos are up there. But that's not going to market it. That's just providing you the bandwidth. You know, they're providing you a place to put them. Marketing is a different matter entirely. I mean, YouTube has, as does Google, millions of videos. So how do people find your video? Well, you need to market it in some other way so that they'll know to look.
I see.
YouTube is a good solution for bandwidth, so you don't have to worry about all the bandwidth you'll be using, because video does take a lot of bandwidth.
Well, if I put on one video that is really good and I include in the beginning or end a little URL of where you can find more videos.
It's hit or miss, but that's called viral marketing, and that's something that a lot of companies, including NBC, have discovered is the best way to market. Yeah, if you put a video up there that everybody starts sending to their friends saying, you got to see this, that's a great way to market something. But it's kind of hard to do that on purpose, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Any final tips for effective web video, as in, you know, keep it short, under 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Or
most people who do web video agree. I just did an interview with Andrew Barron, the guy who does Rocket Boom, which is probably the most successful right now web video out there. Also with Kent Nichols, Ask a Ninja, and both of them agreed. Short. People don't want to sit in front of their computer for more than 5 minutes. If you're doing screenshots, it's important that you do it in high enough resolution that people can see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be an issue. You know, we do a podcast called Mac Break, a video podcast, and there are a lot of screenshots. We shoot them very high resolution, and in fact, that's why we sent out a very high resolution image, a video file. It's a big file as a result, but that way people can see the screenshots. We actually do a 540p, 540 line resolution version so that they can see the screenshots.
Gotcha. Well, thanks so much, Leo, for
you're welcome.
Here.
What are the tutorials of?
Well, they're going to be tutorials, basically dating tutorials for men. I've got this friend who's 58, extremely outspoken. She tells it the way it is, and, you know, talks about how guys need to quit being wimps when they date women, and they need to just be manly men. And she is so awesome in person. I thought, you know what? If I put a video of her up on the web, it's going to spread very virally.
You do have a podcast. I would strongly suggest considering that, because if it catches on in iTunes and people see it on the top of the list, I don't think anybody's doing a dating tutorial. I think that's a great idea. But don't downplay the podcasting notion. I mean, you can call it vodcasting if you want, or vlogging. But the only thing that distinguishes that from what you're talking about is that you have an RSS feed so people can subscribe to it. But by
gotcha.
Doing,
so
by,
basically, it's the video I'm thinking of, which I can produce in Premiere Elements.
Yep.
Saving out probably as what a Flash in Flash.
I actually don't recommend Flash for that. Flash is great if you're going to put it on a website and people click and play. But I would actually recommend either QuickTime or AVI for that. MPEG-4 would be my first recommendation because almost anybody can play MPEG-4. It's high quality. And then what you then the tricky is bandwidth is going to be an issue. And for that, I would suggest Libsyn, LIBSYN.com.
Okay.
You don't pay for the bandwidth, you pay for the storage. So as long as your files are under 800 megabytes a month, it's at most $30 a month, and they have cheaper ones than that. A lot of people do video podcasts use Libsyn. Because the costs are so low. And I would suggest making a... Now, this doesn't in any way mean you can't do all those other things like YouTube and everything, but it just means one more way people can get it by making a RSS feed out of it and then going to iTunes and submitting it. And if enough people click on it, and I think they will, and if Apple highlights it, and I think they might, that's great publicity because you show up in the top 25 podcasts, it's kind of self-reinforcing. I mean, then that's when you really can... You need to use many ways. You can't just pick one to market this thing. You know, you try as many ways to get it out there as possible. I think making sure that it's a podcast will really help. I think there are a lot of people would like this. What's it going to be called?
That's a secret. I can't reveal that yet, Leo. But I will call you back when it's up.
Do.
Take off.
I'll help publicize it for you.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Leo.
Thanks, John. I think that's a great idea. That's one of the things that's kind of exciting about digital technologies. It makes it possible for a guy with an idea to make these videos very cheaply, effectively for nothing once you bought the software and a video camera. After that, it's nothing. I was talking to Ask a Ninja. Now, Ask a Ninja has 300,000 viewers a week. Rocket Boom claims 300,000 viewers a day. We're talking a bigger audience than MSNBC. And Andrew at Rocket Boom says it costs him $25 an episode. Is he making money? You bet. He's selling advertising on it and does very well indeed. So he gives the video away, costs him almost nothing to produce, and he makes all of his money on advertising. It's actually an exciting model. And if unfortunately... humans being what they are, the sexier stuff does in fact get more attention. If you look at what's hot on iTunes, it tends to be the sexier stuff. Things like the French Maids TV, which was two or three women in scantily clad in French maids outfits explaining how to do things like algebra. Now, to me, I found that offensive, but obviously I'm in the minority. It's very popular. So an attractive woman explaining how to date, what women are looking for in a date, I think would do very well. I think it'd be a natural. Absolutely. I probably shouldn't say any more because I don't want to scoop John. I don't want anybody else to get the idea and get out there before he does. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1247.
It's your weekend. We just make it more stimulating.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. So glad to have you aboard. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Mike's on the line from Anaheim. You're next on KFI. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
Great.
Leo, I have a dilemma here. I have an email situation. I'm cross-platform between Windows and Mac, and on my Mac, just a couple of days ago, all of a sudden, I can't seem to receive any of my email from two or three of the accounts.
Hmm.
And I have, deleted them and put them back in. I can send, I can get on the web, but it's from my iBook, and I just... don't know if there's a virus involved.
That's weird. Are you using Apple Mail?
I'm using Mail, correct.
And it's when you say account, you mean a POP account, a POP email account?
Right, right. I don't know if it's a... I can use it. I can check it at all of my PCs, and I also have another Mac at my office.
And they're all working.
Yeah. They're all working. And I just don't know what to do. I didn't want to have to reformat this thing again.
No. You don't have to. One of the nice things about the Mac, by the way, is you never really have to do that kind of a reformat that you would do in Windows.
Okay.
You can always reinstall the operating system without modifying your data in any way. And that's just when you do the installer, there's under the options, there's a backup and install, which backs up your old system file and the folder and then reinstalls. So that's not going to happen. A couple of things to try always on the Mac, and this is actually true on Windows, when you have something weird like this, is to create another account. Actually, I would suggest doing it before weird things happen, but have an account, a backup account that you never use.
I do.
Okay, and when you log into that, can you get the mail?
Generally, I can, yeah. Sometimes I can, and then sometimes it doesn't come through.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. So sometimes it does work on this other account. It works always on other computers.
Always. I have four different accounts that are linked all the time.
And you're absolutely sure that the settings are correct in mail?
Yeah, I am, because I didn't touch anything, and it's been working perfectly for 4 months, and all of a sudden, a day or two ago, it just started acting really strange.
Have you been playing with the firewall on that Mac?
No.
Because there is, as you probably know, a firewall built into all Macintoshes, a software firewall.
Mm.
It's probably worth checking the sharing control panel and making sure that that firewall either is not on.
Okay.
Or if it is on, that it's not blocking port 110. 110 is the port that's used for downloading email.
Okay.
That's what I suspect. Now, what error message is mail giving you?
It's not giving me any error message at all. It's just I can send from, say, the iBook, but if I go, I'll send myself some test messages from other accounts, and they just don't get there. And then I'll go up to the PC, and they're there.
Now, one thing I would suggest doing is, so it's not normally open, but there is an activity viewer window in Mail, and that will tell you what's happening.
Okay.
So you can watch it during the transaction. So, open that window, then say get mail and watch what happens. And it happens pretty quickly, but it'll tell you if it's able to, you'll be able to see it logging into the server. You want to find out what's going on. Is it having trouble logging into the server? Is it logging into the server, but then thinking there's no mail? Is it logging into the server and then something fails, like it can't get the mail? Where exactly is it failing? Because that's going to be valuable information.
It may show me that in that viewer.
Yeah, that viewer will tell, at least get, it happens, can happen quickly, but it will give you some information about what's going on in there. There's also a connection doctor in Mail that you can use to watch the login happening. In fact, that might even be more useful. It's not as fast as the activity viewer, and it actually keeps it. And so it'll give you a green light or a red light, depending on whether it was able to log in. So are you in front of your Mac right now?
I'm not, Leo.
Yeah, because I would say that's something to try. If it says you're logging in correctly, then it's possible that the Mac thinks it's downloaded everything from that Mail account already.
Okay.
You don't have it. Now, it sounds like you use multiple machines to access the same email.
Yes.
The other thing to make sure is that none of the machines is clearing the mail off the server.
No, I've gone there already, too, and I've checked that to make sure that I'm not deleting it from the server.
Yeah. Just so people understand what I'm talking about here is, you can have multiple machines get mail from the same internet provider or email box by checking a box. All email programs allow you to do this, that says leave the mail on the server after I check it. The default behavior is to clear it off. So if you had one of your many email clients was clearing it off, none of the rest would be able to get that mail. It'll be gone. But if all of them have that box checked, leave it on the server, then that, and usually what you do is one of them, it says clear it off after 10 days or 5 days or something. And that gives you a few days to get the mail from the other systems. I avoid this whole problem using an IMAP mail server.
I don't understand that much, but should I look into that IMAP server situation?
Anybody who's doing what you're doing, which is using multiple computers to get this mail from the same mailboxes, an IMAP server is the solution. IMAP works, well, actually, .Mac is an IMAP server, as an example.
Okay.
It keeps the mail on the server. And you never really download the mail unless you explicitly request it. You're always just checking the server. Now, it has a disadvantage, of course, of if you can't get online, you can't get your mail. But it has the very real advantage, and this is why I use it, of always being in sync. So, for instance, when I send a message and it puts it in the sent box, it doesn't put it in the sent box on my local machine. It puts it in the IMAP server's sent box. So I can see that sent message anywhere I log in.
I see.
When I move something to a folder, it moves it for every machine, not just that machine.
Okay.
So that's, I think for somebody who's doing that, that's a good solution. I'm not solving your problem here. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, that's something I can look into if I have to.
It might be a longer-term solution.
I was thinking about going to Entourage, you know, and just forgetting about mail on that machine.
No, I think mail is actually a superior program, to be honest
with you.
Okay. Mail also has a lot of really useful extensions. There are people who have done third-party extensions to mail that are fantastic. I would say look at the connection doctor. It actually has an assist me button. At least try to figure out where it's going wrong, and then you can address it. There are a lot of different places it could be going wrong, but the connection doctor should help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1259. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
June 11, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jessica. 106, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I'm so glad you're here, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're having fun talking high tech. I want to thank, I don't have the guy's name, one of our listeners who put in the show notes, a great recommendation. We were talking about GPS devices. Ellie wanted something for a friend that would both be workable for the car, but then you could disconnect it and put it on a wheelchair. And one of our listeners Cal Explorer has done a little searching and found a deal at a GPS store, which is thegpsstore.com, for a Garmin Quest GPS, which I think is a very good GPS. It has for $17, you can buy a bicycle mount for it, which would work, I'm sure, fine on a wheelchair. You get a lot of battery life. It's got 20 hours of battery life on its lithium-ion batteries, and it's $300. So I think, and I like the Street Navigator. The Quest is a very good. It comes with the Street Navigator map source disc. I think that's another good choice. So I'll put that link in the show notes. Actually, it's already there. Cal Explorer put it there. But that's one of the great things about the show notes. Everybody's invited to participate. We have a comment section. And it's easy enough to get to. Just go to leo.am. That's the show notes website. Click Sunday's show for June 11th, show 256. And you'll find the comments at the bottom. But I put information about everything we talk about in the show into the show notes. It's a good way to go to get more information about the show. And in the next couple of days, of course, a recording of the show. So you can listen back and hear it all over again. Michelle in Los Angeles, welcome to KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Michelle.
Oh, hi, Leo. This is Michelle with a Scottish accent.
Ah, yes.
Come on, anytime.
I love that accent.
Okay, so here's my question this time. I'd like to become a nomad and give up my office if possible and have a wireless internet connection wherever I go. My main issues are this. One, I use GoToMeeting 10 times a day, thanks to you.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah, I do, you know, I get most of my work done that way. And two, obviously, security, you know,
right.
Antivirus. I'm afraid of being attacked or
right.
People getting into my network.
Yes.
And three, somebody told me I should get Verizon over Singular because,
yes.
For example, when you get knocked off and you get back to a spot where you can get on again, you don't have to go through the whole login. You just go, boom, right back to
right.
Where you were. Whereas with Singular, you have to start all over again. I don't even know if that's true, but those are my issues.
Couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, if you're using GoToMeeting, you're secure. That's automatically secured.
And I won't have any trouble getting on there.
No.
Okay.
The Verizon is much faster than the Singular. Verizon,
okay.
EVDO, the EVDO technology that Verizon uses, is faster than Singular's Edge. And you're going to buy a dedicated card just for this laptop.
Correct.
All right, so it's $60 a month unless you're already a customer. I think it's $50 if you're already a customer. Another thing to keep in mind is if you know that you're going to be near wireless access points, for instance, let's say you're one of those people that works at Starbucks. You know, you like to sit and have a coffee while you work. It would be faster and it might be easier to use to get a T-Mobile $20 a month hotspot account And just,
in addition, you mean?
No, instead of.
Instead of.
And just use that wireless. The problem is, of course, if you're not near a wireless connection, you know, a Wi-Fi connection, you're out of luck. But if and I, this is how I do it. And there's the only reason I bring it up. It's for those times when I'm not near a T-Mobile wireless connection, then I use my cell phone, my T-Mobile cell phone, and it's slower, but at least I'm online. So it depends. Now, you couldn't use it for GoToMeeting. If what you really want is high-speed access everywhere you go all the time, and you're always within this Verizon cell signal, then I think the Verizon is definitely the way to go.
Okay.
Now, that high-speed EVDO is not available everywhere. So you want to look at the coverage map and make sure it's available where you go.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't mean you'll be offline. It means it'll slow down.
Okay.
But they have upgraded most cities. Are you, do you pretty much stay in the area, or do you travel?
Well, I don't travel that much anymore because I do go to meetings. So usually, you know, I work around Santa Monica.
Yeah, all right. So if you're always in the same area, it'll work fine. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Santa Monica is definitely covered by EVDO. Almost all of Southern California is, and certainly all of Los Angeles is.
What do I need? I mean, right now I have a router, and I have, you know...
Well, the nice thing about this, you don't need anything. Oh, I see, for security, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're probably... unlike a Wi-Fi signal, when you use the EVDO, you're using... It's digitally, and it's done, and it's an encrypted signal. So you're it's not like somebody can steal your signal, to my knowledge. It's not like a Wi-Fi signal. So in that respect, you're probably fine. You just need the normal protections that you would have even if you were at home, which would be, as you say, you know, antivirus, anti-spyware, that kind of stuff. Do you need a VPN? Well, I don't think so. Not on the Verizon. If you were going to use Wi-Fi, I would say absolutely. But on the EVDO, and I'll have to do some research among my hacker friends to see if there's anybody who's cracked this. But to my knowledge, it's absolutely secure.
Oh, that's great.
So you're you know, just as your digital cell phone is as well. It's encrypted secure traffic. And so for hackers could always get into cell phone, the old analog cell phone. It was easy. And I don't think they've ever cracked the digital cell phones. And it's the same kind of technology. So I think you're all right. But I'll check just to make sure, and I'll let you know before the show's over. So, yeah, I think you're, you know, pretty much you're set.
All right.
It's a good deal. I think that's a really good way to go. You need a laptop with a PC card slot, obviously.
Yes, I have that already.
Yeah. And then it's pretty straightforward, yeah.
All right.
Good, Michelle.
Thank you
I
so
envy
much,
you.
Ken.
Are you going to do it from home, or are you just going to drive around and...
I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to go to the beach and hang out and
golly.
Do work there.
Oh,
and
what
I can
a
go
life.
I can go anywhere I want.
Don't we live in a great age?
It's absolutely... having that GoToMeeting has totally changed my life.
No,
I
and, you
don't
know,
have to be in traffic. I'm totally relaxed, and it's great.
People, I believe that the office was an industrial age invention that is really not a very good place for productivity. Think of all the wasted time in meetings and so forth. And you know, a lot of what people do in the office is pretend to be busy. You know, at some point, we got this notion that you have to come in and be watched like a teenager, or you won't be working. But fortunately, that notion seems to be going away, and people are able to, in fact, work anywhere. People know if you're doing the job or not. After all, if you're productive, you're productive. If you're not, you're not. It doesn't matter if you're there to be watched. And I think many, many bosses have finally gotten over the notion that, well, you better show up at 9 and stay till 6, or, you know, you're fired.
Fortunately, I am my own boss.
That's great. Well,
and only me.
The world, good. It's one of the reasons. That's the other thing that's changing. I try to tell my kids this. You know, in my era growing up, you know, you thought you'd work for a company your whole life, and you'd get a pension and you retire. And well, I was deluded. That delusion disappeared when I was in my 30s, and companies stopped offering pensions. And pretty soon it became obvious nobody was going to keep a job for more than a few years, move around. And now in this generation, you don't even work for anybody anymore. You contract out. You're a freelancer. You have your own business. And that really is the way things are moving. And I think that's fine. You have to adjust to it. You have to have a 401k or retirement or an IRA or a SEP IRA. But I think the times have changed. And I think it's much better, much more healthy for all of us. I envy you. I think that's great, Michelle. Unfortunately, radio show still has to be done from somewhere. I can't do it at the beach yet. 115, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Jan is on the line from Orange. Hello, Jan. Welcome to KFI. Hi, Jan.
Hey, I had a question. I have a Sony mini DV camcorder, and I wanted to find out what software is good for editing it and transferring it to a DVD.
The reason I don't like these DVD camcorders is if they're great.
It's not a DVD.
Oh, good. Oh, great. All right. Very simple. It's the one and only program I recommend. It's under $100. It's Adobe Premiere Elements.
Okay.
You're on a PC.
And that does everything?
That does everything. You're on a PC, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. On a Mac, you don't have to buy anything, obviously. But on a PC, Adobe Premiere Elements, it will do everything. It will import the video from your camera, allow you to edit it, add soundtrack, add music, create a DVD template with motion menus and all that fancy stuff, and then burn it out to the DVD.
Oh, great. Okay. It came with Sony's picture package.
That's not the worst. But it's not.
But I couldn't find anywhere where you could edit it. I was just going through it and kind of trying to figure it out before I did anything. But I couldn't. Maybe I just.
Did they not give you the studio part of it? I would think they would, but maybe they want you to buy that.
I don't know. It just says picture package version
1.5.1. Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Sony has a very good. It would be my second choice video editing package.
Oh, really?
I think it's called Movie Blast. I think Movie Blast Studio. Or just Movie Studio. Screen Blast, that's it. Screen Blast Movie Studio. They bought a company that does this, so they acquired this product. It's the old Vegas video. But I find it to be very good. However, my preference is still for Adobe Premiere Elements. I think it's the best, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Now, what I would suggest is there's a 30-day trial.
Oh, okay.
So I'll put a link in the show notes to it, or you just Google Adobe Premiere Elements. Don't get Premiere. That's like $700. Get the Premiere Elements. It's under $100.
Okay.
And try it. But I would download and try it. Make sure it works with your camera, for instance, because sometimes not all cameras will work with all software.
Okay.
If it doesn't, then get the Sony, which will certainly work.
Well, you know what? I have a Dell window, and it came with some kind of...
Yeah, Windows Movie Maker, probably.
Yeah, is that?
Yeah. Ugh.
No?
No. Ugh.
I guess that says it all.
Nonverbal.
Yeah.
No, Adobe Premiere Elements is great. You're going to be very happy with it. Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot for your help.
But do try the 30-day trial. It's always a good idea with these kinds of programs. Make sure you like it and you can live with it. And it works with your camera and does exactly what you want. That's the nice thing about a 30-day trial. You can do everything and say, oh, yeah, this is the program for me, and then spend the $80. I would bet you Studio Blast also has a 30-day trial. They're all pretty competitive. So maybe download both. See which one, fits you the best. 119, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
He's really easy to get along with once you learn to worship him. Bill Handel, the most listened to morning show in Los Angeles.
KFI, AM 640.
124 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Correct myself. The Screen Blast program from Sony has been renamed, redubbed. It's now Vegas Movie Studio Plus DVD. Same idea. Same program, actually. So, and a good program. I think certainly worth trying. They do have a free trial. Might be an issue. I don't know if it is. It might be an issue having two different DVD burning. No, it shouldn't. Programs on your system. No, it shouldn't. I think they'll coexist fine. You get 30 days, something like that, with either one of them. It's Adobe Premiere Elements or Adobe Vegas Movie Studio. I would download them both, try them both, see which one you like. It's kind of a personal decision. You're going to spend a lot of time in the program. I wouldn't necessarily listen to Leo only. You're going to try your gut too. I have to say, in fact, I was wrong. I was very wrong. I used to say nobody's going to ever want to edit their own video. Having a lot of experience professionally with the pain of sitting in a booth editing video all day, I thought, I can never see home users doing this. And I said so for years. I said, this is just not something anybody wants to do. It's too painful. But it's gotten much easier, I must say. They've made it a lot easier. And people really have an interest in it. It's not for everyone. I think a lot of us, most of us probably will never edit our videos. But for those who have the interest, the inclination, the talent, it's really great. It's really amazing what you can do. I have a lot of video sitting on my shelf just waiting for me to edit it. You know, I'm Final Cut Pro on my Mac, and, you know, I just, the problem is I do it professionally too much to make it any fun to do it for hobby. I think that's the problem. Judy and Marietta, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Judy.
Hi, Leo.
Thanks for calling.
Before I give you my problem, could I ask you for a good manual or book to operate my OS X system?
Yes. Now, of course, I have one, but I'm going to be very objective.
Mm-hmm.
Just mention mine, but recommend somebody else's. Mine is good. It's a Leo Laporte's Guide to OS X Tiger.
Okay.
By Q-U-E. And, you know, I think it's very, you know, it's like my style. It's very easy, relaxed, like. If you want, I think for a lot of people, this is the right book. I also love David Pogue's book, OS X, The Missing Manual. It's thicker and more complete, more voluminous. He still has a very light-handed, fun style.
Mm-hmm.
For some, it might be more detail than they want.
Okay.
So I would go to the bookstore and look at both. P-O-G-U-E is P-O-G-U-E. David Pogue.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's OS X, The Missing Manual.
Very good.
That's kind of, I think most reviewers consider that the best OS X book.
Okay. And meanwhile, I have a disk that is stuck in my Emac.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. Yeah, because the Mac doesn't, unlike PCs, there's no button to eject a disk on the Mac. What you'll see, though, do you know why it's stuck?
Well, I put some pictures on my machine last night, and then I put a disk in.
Do you think it's physically stuck, or is it software?
I don't know. It sounds like it's trying to open when I press it.
It's trying to get it out, but it can't?
Yeah.
Okay.
It went all the way, and I might have pushed it in.
Yeah, or if you had a label on it and the label peeled off.
No, it doesn't. It's totally blank.
Oh, good. Well, that's a relief, because that can actually be a problem.
Yeah.
So a couple of things to do. First of all, you know, this has always been my one complaint about how Apple's done things, and I understand why they do it. They don't want you to eject that disk if the computer's not done with it. So they leave it to the computer to eject the disk. But that doesn't, as you can see, always work. So you're pressing the eject button, nothing's happened.
Right.
One thing you could do is restart the machine and hold the mouse button down as it's starting up.
I've tried that.
That doesn't work.
A little
same thing. Goes, I can't. Yeah. And it's an older machine. It might be it just lost its oomph.
No, it's not really old. It's like a year old.
Oh, it's not too old. All right. Well, you'll notice there's a tiny little hole on the front of that.
In front of the machine?
Right by the CD player. Look for a little pinhole. I'm pretty sure it's on all Macs. It may not be on the eMac, but I'm pretty sure it is.
I don't think it is, because it mentions in the book, if there's one, try it with a...
Oh.
Oh, there looks like there might be one.
I think there is one.
Okay,
and you stick a paperclip in there. What that is there still is a physical eject button. They just didn't give you access to it.
Oh,
so you need to use you need to unbend a paperclip and push it. And it's actually a physical button, and you're actually physically ejecting the disk. If the machine doesn't have the oomph to get the disk out, this will help it. Now, if that doesn't work, you might want to take it to the shop, because what we don't want to do is damage anything by prying it out. The shop will take off the front bezel and actually see the CD player. They may even remove the CD player. Fortunately, it's an inexpensive thing to fix if it is broken, but try the paperclip. That almost always works. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 129, Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
Rush Limbaugh, tomorrow, 9 to noon.
KFI, AM 640.
137 on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, I got caught up in the music here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number. Dean Adele is coming up in just a few minutes. Let's jam through as many calls as we can, however, as quickly as we can. Matthew's in Santa Clarita, our next caller. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Leo. I had a question about referring to my PSP.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you would know about this or not, but my PSP is trying to connect to the internet.
Right.
And what I really want to do is connect to another line. And some lines do not have a WP key, and you know what that is, right?
Yep.
So, in which case, I still can't connect. It comes up with this error of 801140 or something like that. And, in fact, now I just tried it, but it saved it. But now it says the connection is not established.
Yeah.
And I even try it at my own home, and it doesn't work.
Your home router, is it unprotected or is it protected?
Unprotected.
Unprotected. And it won't log into your home router?
No, sir.
Hmm. You know, I didn't have any trouble with my my PSP. It both unprotected and WPA worked just fine. I didn't try it with WEP. WEP is more tricky because those long WEP passwords. You know, they're hexadecimal keys. But WPA, you know, it's a simple password. I was able to use it. You have to key it in with that stupid, you know, keyboard application. But it seemed to work fine. It certainly, you shouldn't have any trouble. Yeah, really. You shouldn't have any trouble with an open access port at point at all. I mean, it should just it should be able to join it just fine. I'm not sure what the problem is, except that it may be a defective. You may have it. Have you ever been able to get online with that PSP?
No. I don't even know what the
So you've never gone online.
Like.
Yeah, how would it be if I did? No, we did it right away because I wanted to play Metal Gear Solid against other people online. It was really fun.
Acid?
What is it? It's the you know, when the one where you're driving around in circles and you've got weapons. I just can't remember the name of it. But anyway,
Wipeout. The third one.
Yeah. Anyway, it's I'm not sure exactly what the issue would be. I'm not you know, too up on all of the different problems that can happen to a PSP. It could be, make sure that your Wi-Fi is turned on, of course.
Oh yeah.
It is turned on in the PSP as well, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. But
today, actually, I was successful to save a network.
Okay. But all that means is you've saved the settings. It doesn't mean you've ever gotten onto the network, though, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah. I would say keep playing with it. I'm not sure exactly what's wrong. It sounds to me, frankly, like there's a larger issue, like your antennas not working, or your card is, you know, the Wi-Fi in the PSP is not working. If it's new and it's under warranty, I'd take it in and say, what's going on here?
Oh, there it is.
Here we are. Hey, Greg, welcome to KFI. Greg's calling from New Jersey.
How you doing, Leo?
Hey, Greg.
I have a question for you along the same lines as that last caller, of course.
Yeah.
Wireless network madness.
Okay.
I'm trying to connect. I just got a new Verizon VX6700.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pocket PC.
Yep.
Which I really like, but I don't get real good EVDO coverage in my house, and it's kind of sketchy, so
right.
I'm trying to connect to my Wi-Fi with it. And I have an Apple base station.
Right.
And I run it in WPA personal.
Okay.
For the
that's fine. Yep.
For the security, yeah.
Yep.
And on Windows Mobile 5, it's just kind of confusing as to, you know, on the Windows side and the Mac side, they call it something different. And I'm just trying to find out what I should be setting the Pocket PC on, because it doesn't seem like I'm able to join the network.
So you're in your connection manager, and you're looking at the Wi-Fi settings. And let me just look at mine here. I actually got on to, I use my, I don't have a 6700, but I have a similar device from HTC. That's who makes the 6700.
Right, yeah.
And I use it with my WPA personal airport access point, and I didn't have any... Yeah. And I didn't have any difficulty connecting at all. In fact, I've connected it to a broad range of access points, both Linksys, Wi-Fi. Here in the office, it's connected to an airport as well.
Now, let me ask you this. On the wireless, on the Apple base station setup, do you, under WPA personal, I keep the encryption type on WPA only, as opposed to WPA and WPA2?
It doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter?
No.
Okay.
Let me see. I'm just looking. Network type, internet, if the network... This is, you know, there's not much you can do to mess with it, is there? I mean, it's not... All you can
there's
do
not
is...
There's a lot. I mean...
And you're using PSK, right? WPA PSK. That's probably where you're going wrong on the Windows Mobile device.
Yes, I'm using WPA PSK.
Okay, that stands for pre-shared. That's pre-shared key, and that's what you're doing, which is exchanging a password.
You see, there seems like there's no... Where would I type in the password if I just go with regular WPA? Because that password or the network key field below there gets blanked
right.
out as soon as I do.
That's because that's not a pre-shared key. You have to use pre-shared key, otherwise you can't enter the password.
Okay.
In that case, there's some sort of, I can't remember, I think it asks you each time. Pre-shared key means you give it the password once and you never have to give it again. That's what you want.
Oh, okay. Because I've been on password. Because when you do pre-shared key, you have to use that really long string of hexadecimal numbers, right?
Nope.
No?
Nope. You should. Because the longer your password, the better, but you can use any password.
Well, I'm confused because in the base station admin utility, you can either pick password and then type a password.
Right.
Or you can pick pre-shared key, and when you do that, it tells you, if you choose to enter a password, it's going to be up to pre-shared key. If you enter a pre-shared key, it must be 64 hexadecimal characters.
So that might be right.
I don't know, something. I'm confused.
That might be right. I don't think I use pre-shared key on the base station. I used it on the mobile device.
Uh-huh.
And entered just a plain old password. You know, I might have been lucky, because now that I look at all the settings in Windows Mobile 5, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
there's a lot of stuff.
What's with that third tab in the bottom, 802.1x? And then that gives you a whole other...
I don't see that on mine.
You don't have
no.
that?
No. I see authentication is WPA PSK. The data encryption type is TKIP. I don't check the key is automatically provided. I put my password in the network key field, and the key index is 1.
Okay.
And that worked. but then maybe that was just lucky. It's because I don't know what any of that stuff is. That's for Steve Gibson to do. We did I dimly remember all of these details. We did a very good, I think, Security Now podcast on this issue and what PSK is on.
So, I listen to them all, but
when you get to the WPA issue, it'll explain what all these terms mean. Maybe I was just lucky, but I can. Here's one thing I can tell you: it does work with an airport. So, because I'm using a T-Mobile SDA, which is just kind of a stripped down version of what you have.
The
one with the keyboard. So I know it works. And I'm not sure what the settings would be exactly. I just use a standard WPA personal on the airport base station.
Now, if you're going to do the pre-shared key thing, is there a little application or anything that will actually generate those for you?
In fact, what I recommend doing, Steve has created a little password, 64-bit password or 64-character hex password generator on his website. That's really good. It's completely random. If you go to grc.com/password.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that.
Yeah,
okay.
And you could paste it in. But you know, the problem with doing that is then you have to enter it by hand into the phone, which is with no fun at all.
No,
so
it's not.
I don't That's really think sure. you need to use... I'm going to have to do some research. I don't think you need to use those long passwords. It does make it more secure, but I don't think you need to.
I run
to.
A closed network. Would that be doing it? But I see it
yes,
show up.
It could be.
It's there.
It could be. You don't need to run a closed network. All that does is mean that the SSID is not broadcast.
ID, yeah.
And that doesn't, in fact, do anything.
Okay. You don't have that third tab down at the bottom, 802.1x?
I think that might be in the... let me see. I'm pretty deep in the menu structure now.
Yeah, I'm under configure network authentication.
Yeah, no, I didn't mess with that at all.
Oh, man.
You know, it's just I'll have to see. Let me look and see if I can find a resource for this. I guess I was lucky because I just, kind of went and put in what I thought I needed to do, and it worked. And in fact, I've been able to log into the Wi-Fi wireless networking. This, by the way, this is a great thing that they're starting to put in phones now. All of these devices are made by a Chinese firm called HTC. Same thing as a Sprint. PCP, he's got a 6700 from Verizon. That's the same as a 6700 from Sprint. T-Mobile sells it as the MDA. And then T-Mobile also sells an SDA, which I think is the Tornado, the HTC Tornado. All of these devices are really computers. They're phones, but they have wireless networking built in, Wi-Fi, as well as Bluetooth. I think some phone companies didn't want to do this, reasonably fearing that their users might use the Wi-Fi and do voice over internet and save money on cell phone calls. Especially if you're on a good network like Verizon's network. He's got Evdo. That's more than adequate to do Skype. And there is a Skype for Pocket PC for Windows Mobile 5. So I think many phone companies thought, man, better not do that. Better not turn that feature on. But these new phones have it, and I think it's great. I mean, even if you don't use it for Skype, but to have, when you're in the area where there's wireless networking, to be able to surf. I have books, Audible books, you know, downloadable audio books on my phone, and it uses the Wi-Fi to download them, which is much faster than trying to do it over the network. And on some networks where you're paying by the bit, it's a lot cheaper too. I'll tell you what, I am not sure, Greg, exactly what I did to make it work, but let me look and see if I can find some documentation for you. And at least it's good to know, you know, sometimes it's just enough to know, yeah, it does work because I'm doing it. I don't know how, but it does work. So that at least gives you, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You can still play with it, and it will work at the airport, your Apple Wi-Fi base station, just fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1:49.
KFI's big stories. We're on it.
President Bush says the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi is a big deal.
But it's certainly not the end of conflict.
Bush says it's an opportunity for Iraq's new government to turn the tide on the struggle.
Statistics from the last few years show killers have a better than 60% chance of getting away with murder in South L.A.
KFI AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
Well, we had some fun with some high-tech questions there. Let me tell you, it's the key to all of this is high-speed internet. That's really what we're all going for. Getting online high-speed is just another way. It just changes the internet. It's a whole nother experience. Is that a word, nother? A whole nother experience. I sound like Daisy Duke here. Let me just tell you about DSL Extreme. $12.95 a month, the lowest price for high-speed internet in the country, and your first month's free, making it even a better deal. It's not a teaser rate. It's for 12 months at least. Your modem is free. Your tech support is free. You get free spam protection, and there are no setup fees. No services you have to buy either. This is it, $12.95 a month. And by the way, a great internet service provider. It's who I use. It's the people who provide us the bandwidth for the podcast and for our chat room. They're committed to the community, to this show, and to their customers. DSL Extreme. Call them right now and get set up. 1-866-2-GETNET. 866-2-GETNET. You can sign up online, too, at dslextreme.com. There are some restrictions, so call 866-2-GETNET. This is how you can get online high-speed style for the lowest price in the country, just $12.95 a month, with the first month free. 866-2-GETNET to get DSL Extreme.
Stimulate yourself all weekend long. KFI AM 640. More stimulating weekends.
1:54 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I'm just trying to figure out exactly what was happening with Greg's setup, and I think part of the confusion is that Apple calls PSK personal mode, and the phone calls PSK PSK. Both stand for pre-shared key. Every user is given the same passphrase. The alternative would be to use a centralized passphrase authentication server. That's the 802.1x setting that he was seeing. You don't want to do that unless you have one running, and I'm sure you don't in a home environment. In theory, a pre-shared key is less secure. I don't think so. Now, perhaps the confusion is the terminology and the fact that Apple in its airport setup says you have to use this 64-character hexadecimal string. You don't. So just choose WPA personal, enter in a regular password. On the phone, use WPA PSK, enter that same password. That's what I did, and it worked fine. And I think that that's the confusion, is Apple's implying that you need to use a 64-bit key. You don't. And it's a pain in the butt, so I wouldn't, a 64-character key. Andre in Rockland, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Andre.
Hi, Leo. I've heard you talk a number of times about how you use Ghost,
yes,
to back up a fresh install. And then if something goes wrong later on down the road,
right,
you can just go ahead and blast that back on and be up and running within minutes.
That's so cool.
I've gone ahead and done a fresh install, reinstalled my core programs that I want to have on there.
So you got just the way you want it. All the settings perfect. Everything's running smoothly.
Exactly. All
yep.
updated.
Yep.
I have everything else cleaned out. Now, do I want to go ahead and use Ghost in the disable the sector? I think they call it.
Yeah, you don't. Sector. There's two ways. There's two ways that a Ghost can work. It can copy everything, the whole drive, even empty sectors.
Okay.
Or just occupied sectors.
Okay.
It's much more compact, obviously, just to copy the occupied sectors. And there's
and
no.
It doesn't make a difference.
No, not in this case.
Okay, well, I think that was my question.
Great.
And then you had recommended using a more day-to-day program for.
Yeah, Ghost is not a good backup solution because it backs up everything.
Right.
So what I would do is it's almost like having a main backup and an incremental backup where you would just back up your data after you've got the Ghost. By the way, Steve Gibson started recommending a program called Drive Snapshot from drivesnapshot.de. It has one chief advantage over Ghost besides being cheaper. It will ghost an image while you're still in Windows. Norton requires you to exit out to DOS to do this.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much, and keep up all the good work.
Good. It's a great question. Let me just kind of briefly explain what he's talking about, because I do recommend this for backing up. And the reason I first discovered it was on TV, where we have machines that we use on the show, and we regularly screw them up. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes not. But sometimes we'll have a virus on there to demonstrate antivirus software. Sometimes we'll just, we install a lot of programs. We always want to get it back to the original known state. So we make a ghost. It's very similar to what you get when you have a system recovery disk that came from the manufacturer. That's an image also, an image of the way the computer was the day it arrived on your doorstep. So having that ghost, and to do this, you need two drives or two partitions, because you can't ghost or make an image copy of a drive on the same partition as you're copying, for obvious reasons. So we always would have two drives in every machine, and I still do that. I think it's really the best way to back up. Make an image of the first drive when you've got it all, as he did, as Andre had it all just right. Everything's working great. It's just then you make an image of that setup. Now, instead of having to run Windows Installer ever again, including, by the way, the verification, the authentication, you don't even have to do that anymore. If something gets messed up, you just blast that image back on. Now, the drawback is it's going to reformat the drive, in effect. It's going to put it back the way it was, including all your data. So either keep your data on a separate drive or be very careful about backing up regularly. We didn't really care because on the TV show, there's no data that you really want to keep. If there was anything we wanted to keep, we'd keep it on the second drive. But then we could use Ghost. Now you have to update this periodically. Every few months, you might want to restore the Ghost image, make some changes. Let's say there's updates, Windows updates and so forth, and then make a new image. That's the only problem, is it is a little bit time-consuming on the front end. But boy, within 5 minutes, you can get a machine back to the way it was. It's great for a machine where it has to work. It has to be reliable. It has to be a production machine, as it does on a TV show. You can catch my TV show now on Google Video. I think, as soon as the server is working. That's at callforhelptv.com for more information about that. So far, we haven't yet been able to get it up. We hope to soon for 99 cents a show. You can, of course, listen to my podcasts at thisweekintech.com. And this show is available via podcast, too, from leo.am. I'll see you next Sunday. Or pardon me, Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Don't forget, we're going to be at the Camera Store, Bel Air Camera, next Saturday, 11 to 2 on Kinross and Westwood. We'll see you there. Meanwhile, Dr. Dean Adell is coming up next on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 2 o'clock. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
June 11, 2006.
Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.